This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
There are a number of empty diplomatic missions in Africa. Trump has yet to fill the spot of Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs.
That's Daniel Scharf speaking on former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's just completed trip to Africa. This morning, Trump fired Tillerson and replaced him with CIA Director Mike Pompeo. We'll have more on this story, plus African reaction, coming up. Also, new cases of cholera outbreak has now reached half of Malawi's 28 districts. And a deadly outbreak of Lassa fever that's spread by rats is overwhelming medical facilities in Nigeria. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, President Donald Trump has ousted his Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, and is replacing him with CIA Director Mike Pompeo. Trump tweeted out today, "Thank you to Rex Tillerson for his service. Gina Haspel will become the new director of the CIA and the first woman so chosen. Congratulations to all." According to Undersecretary of State Steve Goldstein, Tillerson planned on staying at the State Department and suggested Tillerson was surprised by his ouster. VOA correspondent Daniel Scharf in Nairobi covered Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's visit to Africa, which ended late Monday. He reports that no one in Africa saw Tillerson's dismissal coming, but he tells my colleague Kate Pound Dawson that Tillerson's departure is not likely to immediately affect U.S. relationships on the continent.
Well, in terms of Tillerson's possible firing, there was no solid indication that this was coming. But looking back, there were some possible signals. Just after he arrived in Africa, Tillerson appeared to be blindsided by President Trump's announcement that he was ready to hold these direct talks with North Korea's leader, Kim Jong-un. Tillerson was then at some pains to explain that he always supported talks with North Korea, but that they weren't ready for negotiations. And distinguishing between talks and negotiations, that difference was something that Trump did not seem to be recognizing, judging from his public comments. Tillerson also had a sudden illness on Friday, just after Trump's announcement of direct talks with North Korea, and canceled all of his scheduled Saturday events here in Nairobi. Now, we don't know if that had anything to do with the announcement or if it was just illness, but the timing is certainly going to raise some eyebrows now that Tillerson has been fired.
Now, does his dismissal undercut anything that Mr. Tillerson did while he was in Africa? Any agreements that were reached? Any developments within the relationships among the different countries?
Well, as far as the trip itself, analysts that we spoke to here in Nairobi referred to Tillerson's first trip to Africa as more of a listening tour than any sort of leap in relations. He did announce $500 million in food security aid as he was coming to Africa. But for the most part, there were no major deals or important policy shifts. It was mainly FaceTime and giving assurances of U.S. support for security, fighting terrorism, and rhetoric on increasing engagement. Of course, FaceTime with high-level officials is very helpful in advancing relationships between countries. So now the new U.S. Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, will start that FaceTime all over again when he takes his first trip to Africa as the new top U.S. diplomat. So in that way, it does undercut the personal relationships that Tillerson may have started. Of course, Tillerson's visit was also about repairing some of the damage from Trump's reported comment in January, calling some African nations a derogatory term. Analysts that we've talked to say that Tillerson's visit did go some way to try and repair some of that damage.
As you noted, this was Mr. Tillerson's first trip to Africa. He is the most senior Trump administration official to visit Africa since Mr. Trump took office. Does his firing just hours after he got back from Africa raise concerns for the future relationship between the U.S. and African nations?
Well, from from what analysts tell us here in Nairobi, there's little illusion among African leaders that the continent, it's not among the top U.S. policy priorities under the Trump administration, and that's regardless of whoever is the U.S. Secretary of State. There are a number of empty diplomatic missions in Africa. Trump has yet to fill the spot of Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. So the U.S. focus on Africa and this trip, it's very much about security. It's fighting terrorism rather than any sort of new policy shift, new deals, or substantially stepped up engagement. So Tillerson's trip to Africa didn't really change any of those priorities, and it's doubtful that a new Secretary of State will change them unless there's a real push from the White House, from Trump himself, to make that happen.
That was VOA's Daniel Sheriff in Nairobi speaking with Kate Pound Dawson in Washington. Malawi continues to register new cases of cholera in an outbreak that has now reached half of the country's 28 districts. However, the government and communities trade blame over containment efforts. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
According to the latest figures from the Minister of Health, 23 people have died from cholera since the first case was recorded in November. The number of infected people has now ballooned to 739 from 157 in January. Joshua Malango is the spokesperson for the ministry. He told VOA that a major cause for the rising number of cases is because of people's beliefs in superstitions.
Some are still believing that having cholera is not to do with hygiene, it's to do with witchcraft or some traditional beliefs. So instead of rushing to the hospital, they resort to seek some traditional medicine which cannot help.
Malango says, for example, one patient died last Thursday in the capital, Lilongwe, because he refused to go to the hospital for medical help. Malango also says churches that prohibit their sick members from getting medical help have contributed to the death toll. He says the authorities recently rescued and took to the hospital some cholera patients who were being prayed for at a church in Salima District, Central Malawi.
There are members of Zion Church who resorted to go to a church for prayers and the like. A few of them died, and we, using police force, we managed to rescue seven people who were at the church.
Cholera causes severe diarrhea and can kill within hours if not treated. It spreads via contaminated food and water. Levi Zakeo Mazalunga is the head of the Zion Church in Blantyre, which does not allow its members to get medical help when sick. He told VOA it is wrong to say that his church members died of cholera because they did not go to the hospital. He says, we believe that whether one goes to the hospital or not, they will die. It is what God told Adam when he created the earth, that everyone will die regardless of age or circumstances. He read out several verses in the Bible where the sick people were healed because of prayers. But health campaigners have a different view. Maziko Matemba is the executive director for the Health and Rights Education Program. He says the rising cholera cases confirm the government's failure to sensitize communities on measures to prevent and contain the disease.
How far has the Minister of Health maybe identify the gap which is there right now? Because if the condition is still coming out, it shows that I think there's somewhere where I think the government would have maybe done in terms of sending messages to do with hygiene.
Joshua Malango defends the government's efforts to contain the cholera outbreak.
If you look at the figures which we are getting on a daily basis and comparing it with the previous months or weeks, it looks like we are making some strides, because as of yesterday we had only Salima, Lilongwe had no other new cholera cases.
He also says the government has just immunized about 100,000 people during the first round of cholera vaccinations that took place in the northern districts of Karunga and Rumphi. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
A deadly outbreak of Lassa fever in Nigeria is overwhelming medical facilities and raising concerns about the expansion of the disease that's spread by rats. As of March 4th, at least 110 people have died from Lassa, with 353 cases confirmed across half of Nigeria's 36 states. That's more than for all of last year. The victims include health workers who are contracting from contact with patients. The disease is endemic in 9 African countries, but outbreaks are usually smaller and occur when farmers burn bushes in preparation for spring planting before seasonal rains. World Health Organization officials are trying to figure out what's different this year. One of the challenges is the Lassa's main symptoms, fever, aches, nausea, and sore throat, are similar to malaria and typhoid fever. Overall, 20 to 30% of those who are infected die. There is no vaccine or drugs to treat patients. Private media outlets in Cameroon are defying a ban on political programs imposed by the country's National Communication Council. The council had ordered the ban, insisting political debates may cause conflict ahead of senatorial elections on March 25th. Moki Edwin Kenzaka reports from Yaoundé.
National Communication Council President Peter Isoka says Cameroon needs to promote peace, democracy and human rights and needs to avoid hate speech. He says journalists may incite the population with one-sided reporting.
Propaganda is when you go into elaborately telling about one political party and what they have done and what kinds of shoutings and whatever they're doing. That's propaganda. Now, there must be a limitation. Let them, as much as possible, be able to keep to those principles.
Public broadcaster CRTV and Cameroon Tribune have respected the NCC's order. But the Cameroon Journalist Trade Union President Dennis Kwebo and other private media outlets described it as an attack on press freedom. Many radio and television stations have refused to respect the NCC instructions.
Le président de la République va donc se retrouver en train de se débarrasser.
Here at Galaxy FM 93.5, a popular radio station in Cameroon's capital city, Yaoundé, heated debates on the senatorial elections to take place on March 25 are going on in a French-language political program called Au Cœur de la République. Political analyst Jean-Jacques Olabébé says the station has defied instructions from the NCC and is ready to face the consequences.
Nous ne pouvons pas accepter que l'on restreigne, n'est-ce pas?
He says, as an analyst, he cannot accept that someone should restrain freedom of speech in a country that says it wants to be fully democratic. He says the pillar on which any true democracy should stand is freedom of expression, and that Cameroonians need to listen to and question all candidates for the senatorial election on their political plans and ask the balance sheet of outgoing senators. Cameroon has more than 500 newspapers and 100 radio and television stations. NCC Secretary General Jean Toby Hond says the outlets who ignore the instructions will be punished.
Le conseil appelait leur attention sur la nécessité.
He says they are calling on such media outlets to make sure there is some balance in what they are doing, so the campaign for senatorial elections remains democratic and goes on hitch-free. He says if they continue to favor or give preference to some political parties, their media organs will be suspended. Last year, Cameroon's National Communication Council suspended 35 journalists and media outlets, accusing them of failing to respect professional norms and ethics. Some of those punished had criticized the government's handling of the crisis in the English-speaking regions. Others criticized senior state functionaries over the use of public funds. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Moïse Katumbi, an exiled opposition leader from the Democratic Republic of Congo, says he will return home and run for the December presidential election. Katumbi last night launched a campaign with his new Together for Change party outside Johannesburg, saying he will return home by June. Katumbi aims to replace President Joseph Kabila, who took office in 2001 after his father, President Laurent Kabila, was assassinated. Elections were to have been held in 2016, but Kabila's government has delayed them, saying it needs to get the proper election infrastructure in place. His critics say the delay is because Kabila wants to remain in power, which he denies. Katumbi promises that if elected, he will sit down with mining companies that dominate the economy to develop a more fair system of levies and help the nation. However, Katumbi faces corruption charges in the DRC and has lived in Belgium for 2 years. He risks arrest if he returns home. You are listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. President Donald Trump has fired his Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, and is replacing him with CIA Director Mike Pompeo. New cases of cholera outbreak has now reached half of Malawi's 28 districts. And a deadly outbreak of Lassa fever in Nigeria that is spread by rats is overwhelming medical facilities and raising concerns about the expansion of the disease. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The Malawi government has suspended the registration of mobile phone SIM cards as part of its drive to reduce fraud. The move comes amid public concern that the government could use registration to tap people's phones. Authorities vehemently deny this. Lamek Masina reports from Lantyre.
The government introduced mandatory registration of mobile phone SIM cards starting from January until March 31. The cards provide telephone numbers to users and allow the phones to function. During the exercise, owners of the mobile phone numbers were required to register their identification details to the network provider. The new subscribers were required to do the same before buying the new SIM card. The government said in a statement that the exercise aims to curb fraud, which some people were committing using mobile phones. For example, some fraudsters have phoned people with an enticing message that they have won a competition. Then they asked them to send money through mobile money transfers to receive the rewards. But government security agencies said they can't track down the culprits unless they have the fraudsters' details. However, opposition parliamentarians have been seeking government clarification over public fears that the exercise might infringe upon people's right to privacy. Speaking in parliament this week, opposition parliamentarian Kamulebo Kalua asked Information Minister Nicholas Dawusi to respond to these concerns.
Can you come out clear to the people of this country? Can you come out clean that this is not another maybe way of spying on innocent Malawians? I would like the minister to come clean on that, because this is against the spirit of the constitution of our republic.
Opposition parliamentarian Lilian Patel said another problem was that the SIM card registration centers are too far from many people in rural areas.
Mr. Speaker, sir, I would like to ask the minister, can he make sure that this registration goes right down to the villages, that each and every person will be able to register? The second question, it's about civic education. Why is it we start off with implementation and then civic education?
This forced Dawusi to announce suspension of the exercise to put in place remedial measures on the concerns raised.
While SIM card registration is extremely important, but since there's a general outcry that the government has a sinister plans against its citizens, then we think we must have a comprehensive public awareness on the advantage of registering a SIM card.
However, some mobile phone users say suspending the exercise is wrong. Veronica Mwale is a mobile phone user in the capital, Lilongwe.
The process was very helpful, and the suspension is not good. They should have just extended the period, intensified the awareness campaigns, and ensured that the service providers have enough personnel to provide the services.
Information Minister Dawusi says the exercise will resume when enough civic education is done and all misconceptions and concerns regarding the exercise are ironed out. Until then, Malawi will remain the only country in Africa where one would buy a SIM card without registering identification details. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Fishing vessels that temporarily switch off a public tracking system are raising suspicions. They are hiding illegal catches. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
The Automatic Identification System, or AIS, broadcasts a publicly available signal carrying a ship's name, location, speed, and direction. Its main function is to prevent collisions at sea. The advocacy group Oceana uses it to track fishing vessels and watch for illegal activity. Switching off AIS is not just a safety risk, says report co-author Lacey Malarkey.
It may indicate that they're trying to hide suspicious or illegal activities, such as fishing in protected areas or transferring illegally caught fish from one vessel to another.
The report highlights cases the group found suspicious, including a Spanish-flagged vessel that repeatedly went dark on the border of Gambian national waters at a time when a European Union agreement barred fishing in the Gambia's territory.
A lot of these developing West African coastal states don't have the resources necessary to really police their waters. So they actually do rely on AIS data to actually see what's happening in their waters and where vessels are fishing.
Turning off AIS is allowed when the ship's safety is at risk from pirates, for example. And fishing vessel owners note, government regulators monitor them through a separate, private system. They say those records show they are not fishing illegally. But Malarkey says without public access, it's hard to know.
There shouldn't ever be a question as to whether a vessel is following the rules because it's turning off its public tracking system.
Oceana says fishing vessels should be required to keep their tracking systems on or explain why they shut them off. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
I'm Lina Ormoudou, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will look at cold sores, why they appear, and what can be done to minimize the painful symptoms and stigma that surrounds them. Our guest, a pharmacist, Dr. Georgia Pasedis. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is on a five-nation tour of Africa, and high on his agenda are talks on counterterrorism and advancing mutual ties with nations on the continent. On his first trip to Africa as America's top diplomat, he is expected to meet with leaders from Chad, Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Nigeria. U.S.-Africa relations is the topic on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.